Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher, and we close with our program, American Stories. But first,
modified common cold viruses are being used to create COVID-19 vaccine candidates in China and Russia. Such viruses have been studied for over 30 years, but are still not widely used. They are now driving the vaccine research from Russia's Gamaleya Institute and China's CanSino Biologics. The COVID-19 vaccine candidates are called adenovirus vector vaccines. They use modified adenovirus type 5 or AD5 viruses. Unlike most viruses, modified viruses will not cause infection because they cannot reproduce on their own. AD5 viruses can be used as vectors to carry genes from the virus that causes COVID-19 into the body. The human cells will then create proteins to activate the body's natural defenses to guard against the virus. In the 1970s, Frank Graham of Canada was the first researcher to work with AD5 viruses. At the time, he was working at a laboratory in the Netherlands. Graham planned to use the viruses to study natural processes responsible for cancer. He also wanted to provide the human kidney cell line that makes them, called HEK293, to researchers all over the world. The cells became tremendously widespread and popular among researchers, said Graham, who is now retired and lives in Italy. In early gene therapy, AD5 vectors were tested to replace a missing or damaged gene. Researchers stopped using them after an 18-year-old died in 1999 when the patient's natural defense system overreacted. The patient had received a large dose of AD5 vectors during a gene therapy test. However, they believe much smaller doses would have been a good choice to use in developing a vaccine. At McMaster University in Canada, Graham and other researchers developed several AD5 vectors, including one for a rabies vaccine used on wild raccoons. They began developing an AD5-based vaccine against severe acute respiratory syndrome in 2003 and published early test results. The project was set aside when the SARS outbreak ended. In 2011, CanSino Biologics developed an experimental tuberculosis vaccine based on AD5 from the McMaster researchers. The Chinese company then turned its attention to an AD5-based Ebola vaccine at the request of the Chinese military. The Ebola vaccine was approved for military use in 2017. In June of this year, the Chinese military approved emergency use of CanSino's COVID-19 vaccine without Phase 3 testing. Under Phase 3 trials, an experimental vaccine is tested on tens of thousands of volunteers to measure its effectiveness. The Gamaleya Research Institute, which developed Russia's coronavirus vaccine, also used AD5 vectors to develop an Ebola vaccine. The institute said that vaccine has been given to about 2,100 people. For COVID-19, Russian researchers are combining Ad5 with another modified adenovirus called Ad26. On August 11th, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced that his country was the first to approve a vaccine for COVID-19. The approval came less than 2 months after the start of human testing of the vaccine. And the treatment has yet to complete phase 3 trials. Scientists around the world have questioned whether its quick approval without extensive testing will lead to a safe vaccine. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Humanitarian aid work is difficult. Workers helping people without food, water, shelter, or health care must often face natural disasters, slow governments, and even war.
Now they have another enemy to consider. COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Here we will talk about 3 stories of humanitarian workers in hotspot areas.
Earlier this year, Somalia faced its worst invasion of desert locusts in 25 years. In February, the country declared a state of emergency over swarms of the crop-destroying insects. The swarms can grow to several hundred square kilometers. Each square kilometer can contain 40 to 80 million locusts. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says the huge swarms can eat the same amount of food in one day as about 35,000 people. As a child in Somalia, Mohammed remembers the locusts. The swarms darkened the skies. The insects ate his small tomato plants, the ones he carefully grew for his family.
Today, Mohammed is an insect expert with the International Center of Insect Physiology and Ecology in Nairobi. The center fights poverty and food insecurity by developing ways to control crop-destroying insects. To do that, it depends on equipment and people from other countries. However, now borders are closed to slow the spread of the coronavirus, so the center can do little to help.
Mohammed told VOA that in the past, when swarms became too big, helicopters would drop insect-killing chemicals. Other vehicles would also come to help. He said with COVID-19 and blockades everywhere, the situation has worsened. Movement across borders is now impossible. Border closures between countries is one problem. There are also blocks within governmental agencies that have created other problems.
Neera Sharma manages the World Food Program's school meal program in Nepal. She said that the early days of the coronavirus crisis were difficult. During that 4-month period, the food program changed from an in-school format to a take-home format. The new format is based on guidelines from the World Health Organization and instructions from the Nepalese government. But the program also needed approval from the Nepalese government and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which helps pay for the program.
Sharma explained that in May, June, July, 3 months, there was nothing. Then schools were closed during Nepal's national lockdown. They were temporarily made into quarantine centers. This made giving out food even more difficult. Sharma said that there were countless children in Nepal who went to school on an empty stomach. The coronavirus has made hunger worse. The World Food Program estimates that 2.4 million children did not get necessary food when schools closed.
Yemen is currently experiencing what many observers say is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. The rainy season there is now taking place. Some people have lost their homes to flooding. These floodwaters have also caused an increase in diseases, such as cholera and dengue fever. Yemen's civil war has continued since 2015, and it has worsened poverty.
People in Yemen are still in need for very basic things, said Sonia Al-Masad. She manages two offices in the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. These basic things, she said, are water, food, shelter, blankets, and health services.
Now, Yemeni people must also face COVID-19. Humanitarian efforts in Yemen have been delayed because operations take longer now and cost more. Giving out supplies takes place over longer periods of time to permit physical distancing. People also need personal protective equipment, which raises costs.
OCHA and other UN agencies are struggling to find the money to continue operating in Yemen. Since July, Al-Masad has been organizing all her work from her home in Syria. She did spend 4 months working in Yemen, but was only able to move from room to room. She said that during the disease outbreak, she has spent more time working, but not getting the same results.
In Somalia, Mohammed fears that heavy rains will cause another wave of locusts. His organization expects that one in every four Somalis, 3.5 million people, will face severe food insecurity by September. In Yemen, three of Al-Masad's UN colleagues recently died. The UN would not say if COVID-19 was the cause. Still, she expects to return to the country in the next month.
In Nepal, Sharma appeared hopeful. The school meal program gave out the first round of take-home food in July. It will continue giving the 1,500 metric tons of food donated by the U.S., in a second round in late September.
The food program has done very well. So, in this year's national budget, the Nepalese government agreed to expand coverage of the program from 60% of the country to 100%.
Sharma said knowing that a child won't go to bed tonight with an empty stomach because of this program, that's extremely rewarding. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Each week, we answer questions about American English from readers from outside the United States. But today, we answer a question from the American state of Alabama. Khan writes, "Could you tell me what else I can use instead of heads up? That term is considered informal. Therefore, I would like to know the formal word for heads up. Thanks. Dear Khan, thank you for writing. Let us look closely at this expression and other ways to say it. As you said, the term heads up is informal. However, it is so common in American English that we use it in almost every situation. Heads up can be used as a noun. It sends a message that says something is going to happen. Here is an example.
She gave him a heads up that the company's president would be visiting the office.
Also, you can ask for a heads up by asking someone to report when they are in the process of doing something.
Can you give me a heads up about how much time you will need for that project?
You might also hear someone say, "Thanks for the heads up." This means, "Thanks for letting me know." It is worth noting that heads up is a common expression Americans use with friends, family, co-workers, and even in business meetings. But there are other ways to express the idea. One word you can use in place of heads up is warn.
She warned him that the company's president would be visiting the office.
Another way to express the idea is with the word let, when you want to give or get information.
Please let me know how much time you will need for that project.
Imagine that your company is moving to a new office and your supervisor is sending you an email. The message could make you aware of something or draw your attention to something, as we hear in these examples.
I want to make you aware that we are moving our office. I wanted to draw your attention to the move of our office.
Khan, I hope that helps to answer your question about heads up. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. What questions do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Jill Robbins.
Today, we complete the story Benito Sereno, written by Herman Melville. As we told you in earlier parts of our story, rebel slaves seized the ship San Dominic off the coast of Chile. They killed many of its officers and crew. The captain, Benito Sereno, was ordered to sail to Senegal. But first, he was forced to take the ship to the lonely island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. There, it could safely get water and supplies for the long, dangerous voyage to Africa. At the island, the rebels were surprised and frightened when they found an American ship anchored in the harbor. It also had stopped for water. Many of the rebels wanted to sail away, but their leader, Babo, opposed it. They had little food and water and could not go far. Babo created a story to keep anyone from suspecting that the Spanish vessel was in the hands of rebels and that its captain was a prisoner. Now, here is Shep O'Neill with the rest of our story, Benito Sereno.
Captain Delano went down to Captain Sereno's cabin to cheer him up and say goodbye. "Better and better, Don Benito," he said as he entered the cabin. "Your troubles will soon be over." The American invited the Spanish captain to come aboard his boat for a cup of coffee. Sereno's eyes brightened, but then the light in them died. He shook his head and said he could not accept the invitation. Captain Delano was offended. He was about to withdraw when Don Benito rose from his chair and took Delano's hand. The Spaniard's hand shook, and he was too excited to speak. Delano pulled his hand away and turned, climbing back to the deck. His face was troubled. Captain Delano could not understand Don Benito's actions. One minute, the Spaniard was warm and polite. Then, just as quickly, cold and hostile. Captain Delano asked himself, "Why did he refuse to join me? Why is he so unfriendly?" Captain Delano got to the deck and was about to step down into his boat when he heard his name. To his surprise, Don Benito was calling, coming quickly toward him. Captain Delano was pleased and turned back to meet him. Don Benito warmly took his hand with more energy and emotion than he had ever shown. But his excitement seemed too much for him, and he could not speak. Babo then came between the two men and put his arm around Don Benito to support him. Clearly, he wanted to end the meeting between the two captains. Walking between the two men, Babo went with them to the walkway. Don Benito would not let go of Captain Delano's hand. He held it tightly across his servant's body. Soon, they were standing by the ship's side, looking down into the American boat. Its crew turned up their wondering eyes. Captain Delano did not know what to do as he waited for Don Benito to let go of his hand. He wanted to step down into his boat, but Don Benito still firmly held his hand. Then, in an excited voice, the Spaniard said, "I can go no further. Here I must say goodbye. Farewell, my dear, dear Don Amasa. Go, go," and he tore his hand loose. "Go, and God protect you better than he did me. Go, Don Amasa, my best friend." Captain Delano was deeply moved. He would have stayed for another minute or so, but he caught the eye of Babo. It seemed to say, "This is bad for Don Benito's health." And so he quickly took the short step down into his boat with the continuing farewells of Don Benito, who stood rooted at the ship's side. Captain Delano sat down in the back of his boat, gave Don Benito a last salute, and ordered his men to push off. The boat began to move. Suddenly, Don Benito sprang over the side and came down at Delano's feet, and he kept shouting toward the Spanish ship. His cries were so wild that no one could understand him. An American officer asked, "What does this mean?" Captain Delano turned a cold smile upon Captain Sereno and said he neither knew nor cared. "It seems," he added, "that the Spaniard has taken it into his head to give his people the idea that we want to kidnap him. Or else," and suddenly Captain Delano shouted, "Watch out for your lives!" He saw Babo, the servant, on the rail above with a dagger in his hand. He was ready to jump. What followed happened so quickly that Captain Delano could not tell one incident from another. They all came together in one great blur of violent action and excitement. As Babo came down, Captain Delano flung Don Benito aside and caught the rebel leader, pulling the dagger from his hand. He pushed Babo firmly down in the bottom of the boat, which now began to pick up speed. Then Babo, with his one free hand, pulled a second dagger from his clothes and struck at Captain Sereno. Captain Delano knocked it from his hand. Now he saw everything clearly. Babo had leaped into the whaleboat, not to kill him, but to kill Captain Sereno. For the first time, he understood the mysterious behavior of Don Benito, a prisoner under sentence of death. He looked back at the Spanish ship and got a clear picture of what its captain had escaped. On board the San Dominique, the shouting rebels were raising their axes and knives in a wild revolt. They stopped some of the Spanish sailors from jumping into the sea. A few, however, jumped, while two or three who were not quick enough went hurrying up the topmost wood arms. Captain Delano signaled to his ship, ordering it to get its guns ready. When the whale boat reached his ship, Captain Delano asked for ropes. He tied Babo and had him pulled up on deck. A small boat was quickly sent out to pick up three Spanish sailors who had jumped from Captain Sereno's ship. Captain Delano asked Don Benito what guns the rebels had. He answered that they had none that could be used. In the first days of the rebellion, a cabin passenger, now dead, had destroyed the few guns there were. The Americans fired six shots at the San Dominique, but the rebel ship moved out of reach. Small boats were armed and lowered. Captain Delano ordered his men into them, and they moved out to capture the rebel ship. The boats caught up with the San Dominique when it was nearly night. But the moon was rising, and the gunners were able to see where they were shooting. The rebels had no bullets, and they could do nothing but yell. Many of the rebels were killed, and the San Dominique was captured. After an investigation, Babo was found guilty of stealing a ship and of murder, and was hanged. Captain Benito Sereno never was well again, and he soon died. So ended the terrible story of the slave revolt aboard the slave ship, the San Dominique.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.